Oh my goodness. You know what day it is. I'm pretty excited. Oh, come and take a look at the tree. It's gonna be about 7 foot 3. Come and take a look at the Christmas tree. It looks good to me. It's such a lovely green. Come and take a look at the gift. The paper looks nice before it's ripped. Come and take a look at the wrapped up gifts. Whoever packaged this clearly practiced it.
It's Tuesday, April 19th, 2022. 250 shopping days until Christmas. This is episode 129 of Christmas Creeps. My name is Joseph. This is Jonathan and Bradford. Hello, Jonathan and Bradford.
Hello.
Hello, Joseph.
I wanted to try on somebody else's podcast for a hot minute, okay? So sue me.
I mean, if you're going to steal, steal from the best. Am I right?
I know, exactly. Go big or go home. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Christmas Creeps. It's been a long time since we've actually had a full legit episode in our hands, and I'm honestly kind of excited for this one, despite the topic of today's discussion, which is going to be very difficult for us.
Yes. Can check.
I got one right here. I was recently in Pennsylvania. I picked up a local brew to bring home for just for this occasion. This is a Rusty Rail Brewing Fool's Gold Imperial Peanut Butter Hefeweizen.
Oh my goodness gracious. Take me away.
That is very peanut buttery. Oh my God. Mm. I like that. I like it a lot.
Very nice.
Gents, Brad for Jonathan, what are you working with tonight?
Jonathan?
Oh, you know me. I got a good old Dusty here. You know, the bitter, it's an acquired taste. You got to get used to it, but I mean, it works.
Just don't do too many whippets until we get into the meat of things tonight, okay?
This movie was a whippet. It felt like I did. It might have also been because, full disclosure, I might have watched it a little bit of an advanced sous vide, but it was. It felt a lot like doing some whippets, this movie.
Bradford, what about you? Last but not least.
I have a DC Brow, the Imperial Double IPA. Mm. It is delicious, and I love it. Keeping it hyper local, so to speak.
Hyper local. I love it. So, boyos, the topic of tonight's discussion. So, first things first, we have to say there's a very good reason why we never call our shot in advance. Mm. And it's because of shit like this, where we were going to do an episode for 420 this week. We decided on Tuesday we were going to do Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas. Literally the very next day, the news broke that Gilbert Gottfried had died. And that's tragic and terrible. I did not even realize he was sick. But we decided we immediately had to change course because we found out Gilbert Gottfried has only appeared in one Christmas movie. And when we found out which Christmas movie it was, we all in unison said, we have to do this. And now having done it, I'm sorry we did.
We were going to return to the Del Vecchio well, the Well Vecchio, if you will, at some point.
Tonight on the show, we are returning to that well for the 2020 follow-up to A Karate Christmas. Jeez, this beer is killing me already. We're returning to that well tonight for...
You need some help.
We watched a wrestling Christmas miracle. It fucking sucked.
It really, really did. And I'm sorry. My brain does not want to talk about this tonight. Like, it just won't let me get the words out. But, like, yeah, the 2020 follow-up to the 2018 film A Karate Christmas Miracle. We knew this was out there. We knew at some point we were going to cover it. But it did not occur to us that we would have to talk about it so soon. And we thought we were doing a solid for a departed celebrity. And it turns out we kind of snowed ourselves because he's not even in this movie.
Again, just like with Karate Christmas Miracle, they pull a fast one on us, and there's a movie inside of a movie, and Gilbert Gottfried is trapped inside of this movie inside of a movie.
Hoodwinked again. What are the chances?
So my question to you, since you probably know a little bit more about the making of this movie than I do, which is a very low wall to jump over, was this repurposed footage from yet another movie from the Del Vecchio stable, so to speak.
1,000,000%. That film was called Hospital Arrest from 2016. And the cast of that film includes Gilbert Gottfried, Martin Cove, Jimmy Walker, and Michael Winslow. And, oh, you better believe all of them appear in the clips they decide to use for this film.
I wonder how the rights for that work. Like, do they get residuals for... How does that... Movieception. Do they get residuals for a movie within a movie?
I'm gonna guess that Kenneth Delvecchio is what some might call a vexatious litigant. And nobody wants to fucking deal with him in court, so they're just like, whatever.
Well, the man has an eye for efficiency, because half of out of the two movies we've watched, half of each movie has been another movie that's already been filmed and released.
And then also a quarter of this one was fucking home movies of his kid wrestling.
With half the faces blurred out.
Yeah, because they literally just used videos he took at actual wrestling meets of like real wrestling matches.
Yep, and nobody wanted to sign off on that at all. One of my favorite details about this entire experiment is on the IMDb page for Wrestling Christmas Miracle, the top trivia item says, quote, "There is a lot of real wrestling in the movie."
Huh. Okay. Actually, there's really not a whole lot of wrestling in this movie, I would argue.
No, there's a lot of real wrestling in the beginning of the movie. But that lasts for about 5 minutes, and then the plot kicks in, and wrestling is not mentioned again until the very like last 30 seconds of the film.
Yeah, we're treated to this montage of wrestling home movies, and then pretty much the first thing the main character announces is that he's going to stop wrestling for the next 40 days.
Again, 40 days, because it's 40 days and 40 nights until Christmas. Why is that important, Brad?
Main character Case, his best friend is in a coma, and he wants to film the world's most hilarious movie, and he is convinced that doing so will rouse him from his coma because he'll need to laugh so hard. And that's why he's taking a hiatus from his meteoric rise in state wrestling to focus on filming this movie.
But Bradford, I thought you said this was a wrestling Christmas miracle.
Well, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice. No, Karate Christmas Miracle had a lot more karate. I guess there's a little wrestling towards the end when they get the bad guys, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, that's true. We will have to get to that. Yeah, so it takes place over the holiday season, because the kid thinks that if he shows this movie to his best friend on Christmas, it'll wake him up, right? That's like the only excuse they have for this being Christmas related at all.
Yeah.
And it's also the only excuse they needed to rope in an actor of some holiday
renown,
I guess, because one of the main cast members of this film is Scott Schwartz, aka Schwartz from A Christmas Story.
Who did he play?
He played Uncle Ron.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know how or why, but honestly, you know what? Nothing surprises me anymore. Mm. So we got Schwartz in here. We got Martin Cove is back playing apparently two roles, and I'm already, like, my brain is already leaking out my ears, which I found out this week is actually, like, medically possible. So there's that. Who wants to take it away from me here? Because, good Lord.
So, Case's parents, Ajax and
Marge.
Cassandra
are wholly committed to this idea, this film. But Ajax has a tradition where he goes and does like a venue wrestling event every Christmas for whatever reason. And this year it's in the Congo. So he has to leave. So he's out of the picture.
What's he doing in the Congo though, Brett? He's very specific about this.
He's wrestling an elephant, right?
He's wrestling an elephant.
Oh, we're going to get to that.
Like, it wasn't enough to just, like, for him to just write himself an excuse to exit the movie for 90 minutes. He had to come up with the dumbest excuse possible.
I'm sorry, this movie wasn't even 90 minutes long.
No, that's true. That's true. It was a merciful short 75 minutes.
Small blessings. Small blessings.
If you take out the credits, you are struggling to get over an hour.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of... what's a charitable way of putting this?
Wheel spinning?
Wheel spinning, padding, I guess you could call it. Because it's a wrestling movie, get it?
There's a lot of triple spacing, the script.
Double spacing, triple spacing, quadruple spacing.
Widening the margins, writing in 30-point font. All the tricks that you always used to use to get your essays, to the right, page length. They do these here, including what must be lots and lots and lots of ad-libbing from people who are not professional improv artists.
Yes, there's a lot of that going on. By the way, did you guys ever, how teachers got wise to the whole double spacing thing? Because it's really obvious.
Yeah.
You ever just bump up the spacing by like 1.2,
just to fuck with them?
Not to do that, just to actually bump up the page count a little bit there.
Just to goose it a little
just
bit.
Just to juice it just a little bit.
Oh yeah. I totally did that.
So he has to go, Ajax goes to the Congo and leaves the project, Case's project, in the hands of his wife and his wife's brother-in-law. Or, no, half-brothers, like, stepbrother.
I think it's the wife's brother, yeah.
It's
brother, and then later on it's like, oh, he's only a stepbrother. Is it a joke of sorts?
Yeah, there's that. But anyways, it's Case's uncle and his mom who are still with him.
Right, and Case's uncle is Schwartz from Christmas Story.
Yeah. Who basically does nothing in this entire movie except sit around and drink beer and fail at things, which is a mood that I can really identify with.
I'm all about it, yeah. I'm not going to lie.
All about that life. Anyhow.
All about that uncle life.
So the movie is on... Oh, we're treated to part of the movie, which is not a word of a lie... filmed in what I can only surmise is an abandoned hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they use it as a plot device because it's supposed to be a hospital prison, but it's clearly in real life an abandoned hospital.
Just an abandoned hospital, yeah.
Just filming in an abandoned hospital, no big deal. Which is at in two parts, it's admirable, but it's really creepy in its own way. Like,
also considering when they filmed this, it was like that's the last possible moment you could have filmed in any empty hospital in America, because this was filmed in like December of 2019.
Well, I mean, I'm even after the pandemic, I'm sure there are plenty of broken down abandoned hospitals all over the country, but yeah,
but this was clearly like recently vacated,
Oh yeah, I getcha. Yeah.
But also, this sequence of the movie where we're treated to a scene from quote-unquote Case's movie, it's not immediately apparent that that's what's going on. So the scene transition from the kid announcing that he's retiring from wrestling to make a movie to then all of a sudden Martin Cove is here playing a blind prison warden. It's not immediately apparent that that's like a different movie.
I was very confused. I'm sure that was the intended effect, but oh, it was some whiplash. And then Del Vecchio's there in a wheelchair doing, I don't even want to touch it with a 10-foot pole, man. He's supposed to be doing ASL, but it's all silly is the best way I can put it.
He's an FBI agent, wheelchair bound and mute, and his partner translates for him. But he does all of the worst, like, silliest, fakest ASL you've ever seen.
Like, he does the Macarena at some point, bites somebody's arm. It's
genuinely terrible, and I hate it, and I almost shut the movie off right then and there.
It's pretty bad in its own way. It's very cringe, bro.
I kind of got the feeling from Karate Christmas Miracle that part of the reason that the dad was not in the picture was because, like... he's not an actor, and he just wanted to be the guy behind the scenes. in this movie, he goes all in on being the hammiest actor possible, and it's awful. It's truly awful.
He does vacate the picture for most of the picture. I mean, he's in the prison movie, obviously.
But while he's here, he makes his presence very well known.
He certainly does, doesn't he?
But this is where we get Gilbert Gottfried. Because he's playing... Oh, God, what is it? He's playing an attendant in what is supposed to be a prison, but it's also apparently very obviously a hospital.
But it's a prison for doctors.
It's a prison for doctors.
It's a prison for doctors built in an abandoned hospital.
It's a center for ants. And that joke was probably funnier than literally anything in this fucking movie.
Yeah. You know,
like literally just even, going, hey, remember Zoolander, was funnier than anything this fucking movie did.
You know, we watch a lot of lemons around here, but usually once or twice a movie that's trying to be funny will like get me, you know,
mm-hmm.
like I get one or two chuckles. Not happening with this one, guys.
Yeah, the closest I got was, are you sure you're German? Got like a heh out of me.
Okay.
And that's all I'll allow it.
Yeah. After this scene ends with this prison for doctors, it immediately cuts to two of the worst comic relief characters I've ever met.
One is the law teacher from Karate Christmas Miracle.
Yes. Julie McCullough is back again, y'all.
Go, go.
And she plays...
Separate you two, goddamn. Christ.
And fittingly enough, she plays Kitty Cat. Which is what Jonathan is wrangling right now.
Knocked a bunch of shit over and then decided to fight in the shit they knocked over. Good God.
Oh, man. You gotta love them. Pets, everybody. Let's hear it for pets.
Let's hear it for the pets. But, is his name Chuckles? Chucky?
I guess.
His name is,
man,
Charlie Wiener.
Is that really his name in this movie?
Yes, it's Charlie Wiener.
Oh, boy.
Charlie Wiener and Kitty Cat are two actors who appear in Case's film, quote unquote. They don't think that their parts were adequate enough, and they decide they're going to steal the fucking movie. No, they don't even do that. They decide they're going to steal shit from the kid.
Because they're about to foreclose on their house, I think, was the tenuous right. string there.
They expected to be paid, and that's not going to happen. So they... dress up like the Grinch and Cindy Lou Who, like you do, and it's, that rhymed, and I'm sorry.
It's this, the faces, man. Oh, the faces.
And these two act like they're in a movie for four-year-olds, because they're putting on almost entirely too cartoonish a performance.
I've seen more subtle children's theater. Let's put it that way. Like, more nuanced. Subtle.
More nuance at a children's Sunday school performance.
For real. So they break into
Uncle Ron's van to steal all of Case's Christmas presents, and in the process, they also accidentally steal the hard drive that has the only copy of this film.
As one does. Wouldn't it still be on the computer that they edited it on?
How in the world is that the only copy in existence?
That's what, you know, Joe, that's what they
kid
call...
is dumb as fuck.
Because that's what they call movie magic.
I guess. But, like, the computer that we're currently recording this podcast on, as soon as we finish recording it, I make a copy and put it on a separate hard drive so this exact thing does not happen.
And upload it to the cloud.
Cloud computing, everybody. Let's hear it for cloud computing. Yeah.
Oh, boy. So.
But hey, guess what? We go back into Case's film for another round of whatever the fuck. Because Judge Michael Winslow is sentencing a bunch of shitty doctors to a prison sentence in a hospital waiting room. Because for some reason, he says they made too much of a ruckus in the courtroom, so they moved the... they move the sentencing to a hospital.
It's like a weird group sentencing, too, where there's like 12 doctors and he's sentencing them all at the same time.
Yeah. And this is where we get the other people you've heard of in the cast, because Todd Bridges is the prosecutor, Jimmy Walker is one of the doctors,
and yeah,
and it's clear you look at the poster for the movie, this movie, and all of the names on it are just, except for Mario Del Vecchio, the fucking kid, are just people that are in this movie within a movie.
Yeah, it's the biggest, boldest lie I've ever seen. And then somebody makes a Jimmy Walker Dynamite joke, but they make it at Michael Winslow, and I don't know if that's intentional or if they fucked up.
Yeah, the entire time that dumb piece of shit Charlie is watching it, he's just making jokes about the actors in it.
He's like trying to riff on it.
Right, but he doesn't know who's who. I don't know. But their plan is that they're going to hold the hard drive ransom for $1 million. And Charlie Wiener decides to call Case's mom and pose as a German of some description to request the ransom.
There's a lot of really bad. I mean, they recognize that they're bad, but that doesn't forgive them.
My one joke, the one thing that made me laugh in the entire film, Case immediately, you know, figures out like who the hell this is, because he's like, oh yeah, I know that voice. That guy was in our movie.
Yeah.
Like the tension is just immediately just dropped. They don't
he's just like, oh, it's that guy in the movie that kept trying to do shitty accents.
Yeah. He's like, you know what? All right, I'll give y'all that one.
Fair enough. So fair the enough. Rest. So let's call a spade a spade. A good half, the whole center of this movie is these two clowns trying to ransom this movie and or broker a deal for the distribution of this movie.
Yes.
And then Case and Case's uncle and mom trying to get said movie back, either by hook or by crook.
Well, by hook or by crook, you say, but it's mostly like by accident or not, because they really don't try that hard.
They really do not. That's true.
And then it's here that the major subplot of the film reveals itself, and it's the most baffling string of words I'm going to ever have to say.
Is this where it's all explained over the radio?
Yes.
Okay. Better because you to do this than me, because my brain shut down about a quarter way through this sequence.
I thought I was having a stroke. I had to watch this like twice to remind myself, no, this actually happened to me.
You know how in Xenogears, for those of you who've played Xenogears, in the second half of the game, on the second disc, they ran out of budget, and so it's a main character sitting in a chair telling you what happened in the rest of the game?
My brain has already shut off, but go on.
This adopts that same philosophy, storytelling philosophy. All right, take us away. Paint this beautiful word picture
for
us.
I had to like plot this out to make sure I had it right. So remember, Case's dad, Ajax is his name, goes to the Congo to wrestle elephants. As people are tuning in to listen to this on the radio, there is a news broadcast that goes out. The news radio is on, and it's I assume it's Kenneth Delvecchio giving this weird impassioned speech about how we should bring back child labor in this country. And then the breaking news report comes in. Ajax has led a political coup in Congo. The country's dictator, Bob Smith from Norway, challenges Ajax to a wrestling match. Then the South African sports network, the BBD, broadcasts the match live over the radio. And Ajax, with his wrestlers and also the military of Congo, overthrow the overthrown government, and he becomes the president of Congo. Do I have that right?
He
helps the general become. I don't really know, usually historically speaking, whether military juntas usually are done to bring in democracy per se, but that's apparently what he's done.
Well, of course, because America.
Because America.
Yeah, and I'm just going ahead and say it. Death to America. I mean, pack it the fuck in.
There's this. It's We talked about Mr. Delvecchio's oeuvre last time, which is to say none of this is particularly surprising.
Oeuvre is French for egg fart, right?
Yes.
But yeah, so Mr. DV's political leanings aside, so this is what's going on in the middle of our wrestling Christmas movie.
But they frame it that everybody is listening to the radio, including a portable radio on. It's a very interesting shot. There's a portable radio sitting on a tray, which gets loaded up and taken to the two antagonists in the cafe. But it's like a weird POV shot. It's the strangest shot in this entire movie.
And it's also like an ancient ass, like 1950s transistor radio.
Yeah, I think that's the weirdest part, is that somebody's just, this waitress is carrying around a radio on a tray in a cafe, you know, as one does.
Yeah, and it's, I guess it's like they're trying to mimic the one like tracking shot with the waiter from Goodfellas, but they really don't know how to do it. And it's at this point that I have to quote the New York Times from a 2010 article that says, Kenneth Delvecchio is no Martin Scorsese.
Ouch.
I just wanted to get that on the record that the New York Times said this. They said it in 2010, but they still said it.
Yeah, I want to clarify. The context for that is the guy was told that being a movie director and also a judge was a conflict of interest, so he decided to quit being a judge.
He gave up the job the steadily paying job for the job that no one is ever going to care about.
This movie allegedly had a budget of $2 million. Where is he getting this money from?
Oh my goodness.
Hang on.
Quit Kenneth Delvecchio money. Whoever's doing it. Don't stop.
Hang on. I don't care where the money came from. Where did the $2 million
go?
Because it's not in the movie.
The craft.
Because remember, he already spent it. He already spent other money making half of this movie 5 years earlier.
They had a really kick-ass craft services table every day.
Look, Scott Schwartz's fee is exorbitant. That felt mean, and I apologize.
Oh.
The one thing that baffles me the most about this, because I was about to make a fucking Gobble Ghoul joke, but the one thing that baffles me about this is the guy named his kid Mario Delvecchio, and yet somehow these just aren't the most, like, Italian-Americans, whoever Italian-American, this side of the fucking Jersey Shore.
Yeah, there's a disturbing lack of Italian horns going on in this movie, if that's what you're trying to say.
Yeah, like, you expect this movie with someone with a New Jersey guy with an Italian name, you expect this to be, like, Italian the fuck up, especially when he named his kid Mario.
Hey. They're a colorful and diverse people.
No, they're either the Sopranos or Jersey Shore. Those are the two character classes you could pick in New Jersey.
I know.
I'm not here to debate the merits of Italianhood in American society. I really don't want to dip a toe into that. Please, let's not.
Everything from New Jersey is terrible.
Do you know you can't pump your own gas there?
Yeah, because they'll fucking drink it, and that's how, like, Mallrats gets made.
It's terrible, and I avoid filling up in new, like, I would rather, oh man, it's just the worst. It's so awkward.
Finish the joke, Brad. You would rather what?
There's, like, I'd rather crawl, I'd rather push my car into Delaware than have to deal with, like, the weird social contract of getting gas in New Jersey. Like, talking to a dude, do you tip him? Do you not tip him? Like, just let me pump my own gas and let me live in peace, please.
That reminds me of an anecdote I wanted to share with you guys real quick. When I bought this peanut butter beer in Pennsylvania, did you know that you have to buy beer at grocery stores in Pennsylvania at a special register designated for beer?
I did not know. I didn't know that.
I love idiotic blue laws like that where it doesn't actually change anything. Like how here, like, you can't buy booze before noon on Sunday.
Yeah.
Which is like, oh yeah, you really stuck it to us. I'm going to spend that time in church instead. Like, it reminds me of all fucking things of Family Guy, this one scene where they're all in the car and they're trying to, like, Lois is trying to punish the kids and Peter is just doing a horrible job at it because they're, like, complaining at him.
If you kids don't knock it off, we're not going to McDonald's after church.
Mom! Don't worry, we're going. But you don't get to supersize.
Oh!
Okay, you can supersize, but no apple pie.
Oh, come on!
Okay, you get an apple pie, but you can't blow on it.
It just reminds me, just like, you know, no, you can't have beer on Sundays. Unless it's afternoon.
I think we've gotten into the history of the great Sheetz Wawa War.
I think we have.
Many times on this podcast, but that is part of the reason that Sheetz exists is because of the weird blue laws in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
I've mentioned this. I feel like I've mentioned this on the pod before.
But please go on.
All right. So the reason that Sheetz has so much food is that it was a weird dodge of a blue law because you could, if you had a gas station, you couldn't just sell beer at a gas station. It had to be like you had to offer a certain volume of food rather over alcohol in order to be classified as a restaurant. And they were like, okay, well, we're a gas station. We want to sell beer. So we're just going to sell a bunch of food too to get around it.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, I can't speak to whether or not that is also part of Wawa's origin story, but I believe that's how Sheetz came to be, if I'm not mistaken.
I mean,
or how it came to be the way it is, I should say.
Yeah, it's like how every bar down here is either has to serve at least, like, I think what a certain percent of their menu has to be food, or they have to be a private club.
Oh, yeah, that dumb thing.
So can I tie all this together with my personal beer anecdote? I can do this. I can do it in two steps.
Do it.
Okay. So while I was in Pennsylvania, I went to this Italian restaurant. It's called Mamma Nina's. It's great. And the portions are gigantic. Like, I literally could not eat half of this chicken parmesan. So they boxed it up for me. I took it back to my hotel room. The next night, I wanted to eat it, but I couldn't just put the styrofoam in the microwave. So I had to go out and find paper plates. There's a Sheetz across the street from my hotel. And they have beer, which I'm definitely interested in. But guess what? They don't have paper plates. So I have to go further down the street to a Weiss grocery store. And while I'm there, I grab the paper plates. But then also I go to the beer cave. And I study the beer for about 10 minutes trying to figure out what the hell I want to get. The lady working the beer register watches me do this. And then she watches me walk away to the self-checkout line where I thought you could just pay for beer like a normal human being. And then, as I'm trying to ring this up, one of the checkout girls has to come up to me and say, "Sir, it is illegal for you to buy your own beer in the state of Pennsylvania. You have to go to the beer register."
So weird.
So I walk back to the beer register where the lady is once again standing there just watching me. And she's like, "I wondered what you were doing." I said, "Ma'am, I don't even live here."
Clearly.
All because I wanted paper plates. I am an idiot. Anyway.
You're not an idiot. This law is very strange.
So every state has to have its own unique way of being the worst fucking place in the country.
Ain't that the truth? Hey, speaking of New Jersey, let's get back to this movie where for some reason, all of a sudden, everyone starts doing accents. Kitty Cat and Charlie Wiener are Germans, and then they're British. And then they're Australian, I think. They change their accents 3 or 4 times. But then the mom gets in on it. Ron gets in on it. The kid gets in on it. I don't know what they're doing.
Then there's a Japanese accent.
Yeah. It's like all of a sudden everybody decided this could be my demo reel. We're going to act up a storm.
It's certainly a thing, huh?
The finale. We're just going to barrel straight through to the finale of this piece because, good Lord, we got to get out of here. They finally set up like a ransom point for the hard drive with the film on it. And it's at the wrestling gym where Case had just recently retired from his career as a youth wrestler. And Ron and Mom meet Kitty Cat and Chuck Wiener at the wrestling gym. And then Ron turns on everybody. His heel turn, because this is a wrestling movie, he wants in on the $1 million. Point being, there's a mild moment of peril when you think something bad might happen to these people. And then Wrestle Dad shows up with the entire Congo army to arrest Chuck and Kat and Ron.
Case appears first, I thought. Case shows up.
Let me break down this fucking standoff. So the dad appears and gets Charlie Wiener in a like a fucking hold of some shit, and then Ron turns on them. So that's when the dad lets him go, and the mom drops the gun, and then Case appears and tackles the uncle, and then a bunch of wrestlers with the Congolese General Ringo.
General Ringo, yes.
And tie them all up, and then they leave.
Yep.
And then so I don't think they show the movie to the dead kid. And then
that's right. I totally forgot about the kid in the coma.
Hang on. Okay. So this is a wrestling Christmas miracle, right? Where's the miracle?
So then what happens is the kid, Case Gabriel, fucking God.
Well,
it's the kind of name you give your fucking original character in your fanfic when you're a really bad fanfic writer and you're 12.
You see, he named himself.
I think the dad did it. That's the problem. I think this is Kenneth Delvecchio's idea. Because he named his character Ajax Gabriel.
Ajax and Cassandra, and then so Case has to be some kind of Greek myth, like allusion to, right? I don't know. We're not gonna tease that one out. Anyway.
We're not Wikipedia creeps. Look it up on your own time.
Yeah. We're not Homer creeps.
I mean, we are Wikipedia creeps because we do dabble in pretty much useless trivia as we have for the past 30 minutes. But anyhow. But
not right now because it's not important. So the miracle.
The kid tells his dead friend, hey, do you want to know a secret? My dad's in the fucking CIA, and he goes around everywhere wrestling as a guise to overthrow governments and install democracy. And I'm doing scare quotes at the microphone now. And then he says, also, here's a cool wrestling move that might either kill you or it might wake you up. And then it wakes the kid up.
The end.
And everybody cheers the end. Like
it really jumped. The kid wakes up, says two lines, and then it jump cuts to the credits.
Like, I thought the ending to A Karate Christmas Miracle was insane. How the kid gets his black belt, dad shows up, everyone's happy. The end. I didn't think they could top it, but somehow they did, because this one, he puts his comatose friend in a headlock. He wakes up and says, "Get off of me." Everyone is, you know, everyone
runs
cheers,
into the room.
Runs into the room, cheers, smash cut to credits. Like
smash cut to more wrestling footage than credits.
Oh yeah.
It's a miracle, a true Christmas miracle. God bless us, everyone.
Also, I loved how like one of the shots they showed of the kid playing football about how like he's clearly such an amazing athlete. He's literally just like yanking a kid down by the fucking jersey. Like the first shot they show is it'd be like if they cut it back to the wrestling and the first thing they show is the kid just jamming someone in the fucking eye.
Like the finger poke of doom. I learned it on TV. Like, I didn't think they would do it again. You know, like, the movie lulled me into a false security, and I was just like, oh, yeah, whatever, it's just going to end soon. No, they pulled off the miracle with 30 seconds to go. And it almost makes me wonder if there's a third film coming.
Like I said, he's a man who values efficiency.
Yeah. This, again, I think Jonathan said this on the last one, this entire film could have been an email.
What's the third sport they're going to do? It might be a martial arts again, because we have karate and wrestling. Is wrestling considered a martial art? It probably is. Anyways.
A boxing Christmas miracle.
Yeah, that's this kid seems like the kind of asshole that's going to get really serious in a boxing once he like gets a little
once
more
he watches Rocky for the first time.
Yeah, he gets a little more self-important, decides no, he's going to do boxing, which is the true sport.
Well, and two, the dad seems like the kind of dad who's only going to let his kid play certain sports. Certain sports aren't meant for manly men like Case Gabriel.
Like Case Gabriel.
But boxing is totally one of those sports.
For sure.
We're going to get a boxing Christmas miracle where the kid is just going to like punch an old man in the face and suddenly dad's going to like get a heart transplant. See, I already wrote a movie. Mario Del Vecchio, give me money. I mean, no, Kenneth, Mario's dad, give me money.
No, Mario, give me money. Give me your fucking lunch money.
I'll make this film for you. I'll make it for free. No, I won't. I'll make it for $10.
So I'd like to go over the reviews real quick because there's 7 of them.
Please.
Oh, no.
So
professional or amateur?
These are IMDb reviews. There are 7 of them. This movie was released, according to IMDb, on November 15th, 2020.
Okay. Oh, okay. So it didn't get wide release because the pandemic, so they released it to on demand. I see. Okay, go on.
It was on Prime, but I watched it on Tubi because I don't want to fuck with my Bozo algorithm that badly that it thinks I actually liked this shit. Like, my sister asked to use my Amazon account one time back in, like, 2004, and I was an idiot and said yes because I didn't know what she was going to do. She bought a fucking Phyllis Schlafly book, and I had that shit hanging around my fucking algorithm for years.
You know, I guess if you buy it, you're doomed. That's right. You can, if you're browsing, you can delete, but...
Yeah, I think I eventually found a way to tell it, like, don't include this in the fucking, like, calculating my shit.
Yeah.
Anyway, the first review was from November 26, 2020, 10 out of 10. Great family feel-good movie. Everyone who believes in Christmas miracles should gather around the TV screen and enjoy. Great performances by the actors.
Written by
Joe Ten Paces. Let's see what other reviews Joe Ten Paces has done. None.
Oh. I was going to guess other Kenneth Delvecchio films, but okay.
Well, hold on, actually.
Okay. Just hold wait.
On.
Got
hold
it.
Hold on a second. Because this person actually has their IMDb profile filled out, so let me see something here. Because I'm a little suspicious. Joe Ten Paces is actually Joe Woolley, who played General Ringo in the movie.
Really?
So, really? First review on IMDb is by one of the actors in the movie.
But wait, he did wait how long after the like 4 months after the release to get around to writing this review?
11 days.
Wait, 11 days?
Yeah, November 15th, November 26th.
Oh, November. For some reason, I thought you said September. Got it. Okay.
The next one. I'm a huge fan. November 27th. Great movie, great actors, great everything. I am a huge fan of Mario and his family. Can't wait for the next installment.
Uh-huh.
This, again, the only review they wrote is of this. This is Jess Loves R.A. Let's look for someone named Jess in the cast and crew. This is a fun game now. This is more interesting than the entire movie was. Of just this, like, absolute, like, fucking Keystone Cop, like review fucking manipulation.
I'm gonna guess if we can't find this in the credits, this is somebody Mario goes to school with, would be my guess. Or a cousin, perhaps, or something.
Possibly, yes. I don't see any Jess in the cast or crew listing here.
The next review is the Wise Guys Show review. The Wise Guys Show and our family were all honored and proud to have been a part of the production, and the crew are truly professional. I'm guessing these are the fat guys at the end, are the wise guys.
Maybe.
Yeah.
This is another 10 out of 10 review by somebody directly involved with the movie.
So what is this? Does this have a 10 on IMDb?
No, those are the first three reviews, all written on November 26th, 27th, 2020. The next review is listed in here. It's not listed in like, order, but the next review on here is from January 2nd, 2022. 1 out of 10, offensive to the senses.
Nailed it.
Did they elaborate on that? Or just left out thesis laying there?
They said, like, it starts out by being insulting to those with autism, blind, and the hard of hearing, and then it gets more racist, and then it makes you physically ill. It's not funny, heartwarming, or anything. It's just uncomfortable.
Ain't that the truth, boys?
Next review, 1 out of 10, horrible movie. Then 1 out of 10, an idiot's tale. And then 1 out of 10, could possibly be the worst movie ever made.
Ugh.
I mean, that's a fairly good segue for us to actually rate this movie, if we want to take it there.
Yes.
Are we done with this nonsense?
I believe so. Unless, does anybody have anything else they want to add?
I found a Wise Guys Show podcast on Podchaser, but I can't tell if they're related or not. Wise Guys Z Show. Oh, no, there's a YouTube channel. Oh, God. Oh yeah, oh yeah. These guys are some real. oh no.
Some real people who have their girlfriend write into like relationship advice on Reddit, being like, "My boyfriend started doing a really offensive Italian accent after watching The Irishman."
Thank you, thank you. If you're not in our Discord, please join our Discord. I find some things and I put them in there for everybody to enjoy.
I tried looking around just to see what like Christmas related "Am I the Asshole" posts there are, and I have to say, it you know, everyone in there, like, I just recognize they either like, I recommend they either get like a divorce or a weapon, because I think those are the only two solutions to any of their fucking problems. Like, mm-hmm. Good lord, I don't know what it is that people can't have, like, fun Christmas asshole problems. They're all just like, am I an asshole for, like, basically severing all ties with my family? And as you look at it, and it's like, oh wow, your family are terrible, or it's just like, you are literally the worst person I've seen today. It's always one or the other. There's never anything funny. Never anything fun.
I find the fun things. Don't let him dissuade you. He's just talking about Christmas once.
Yeah.
But yes, we will put the link to our Discord channel in the show notes. Please come and join us and talk about nerd stuff and video games and all manner of Christmas shenanigans and tomfoolery. So let me read you the description for The Wise Guys Show as listed on their YouTube page. The Wise Guys Show is an Italian-American, crazy old-school-style neighborhood media and variety show bringing back the old-school days of hanging on the corner and reminiscing on past and current events while promoting and networking with other respectful groups similar to ours. And every single word in that sentence is capitalized.
Should we have The Wise Guys Show on Christmas Creeps? Are we a respectful group similar to theirs?
A very tasteful, respectful conversation with The Wise Guys Show.
All right, I'm looking at, these are absolutely the guys who played the wrestlers in the end of the movie.
Yep, this is them.
So, I mean, I'm not going to get too much into that. It's like, at least these were like absolutely bit parts. This isn't an account going on there named, like, you know, Luigi Del Vecchio being like, oh, it's a great movie, I highly recommend it, that kid is such a great star, or some shit like that, you know.
Yeah. Honestly, this is really just a case of networking in action, and that's kind of all where I want to leave that
truth and, like, labeling.
I ain't got no problem with that, you know. You know, all a guy, right. He wants to put you in a movie, nothing wrong with that. Hey, let's go on to the Crankometer now, where we rate these Christmas films. The Crankometer is our patented XY-axis, where we rate Christmas movies. The X-axis is how Christmassy a film is. The Y-axis is how good a film is, the quality quotient, if you will. So, yeah, let's start with the X-axis, the Christmas quotient. How Christmassy is A Wrestling Christmas Miracle?
What did we say for Karate Christmas Miracle? Because it's the same lack thereof.
It's very bare bones. This could have been a Flag Day wrestling miracle.
Yeah, for real.
Or, I mean, it could have been presents for the kid's birthday.
Yeah, this was one of our rare -5/-5s.
I mean, it's probably everything that Karate Christmas Miracle did, you know? Or did not do, I feel like this took it to the next level. Let's put it that way.
I mean, the difference between the two is Karate Christmas Miracle thought it was being, like, sincere in some way. Yes. Wrestling Christmas Miracle thinks it gets the joke.
That makes it worse, honestly.
Yes.
Well, that has nothing to do with our Christmas rating. That's just, that's quality. So, I mean, you're right. This is everything as Christmassy as the other film did, maybe worse, because the ticking clock of the countdown to Christmas means absolutely nothing.
Yeah, he could show this guy this film the next day.
Yeah, exactly. Because by the time we meet up with him, the film has already been made.
Yeah, like, why didn't you just take the film to your friend's house immediately?
That's a very good question.
One of those old refrains that we like to say, because then there would be no movie.
Yes.
Because then Kitty Cat and Chucky Wiener could not have wacky shenanigans for an hour. Actually, no, I take it back. That's as good a reason as any of the, you know, let's do that. Let's cut all of that shit out of this movie because it's the worst and I hate it.
Could we take this to Santa's workshop or is this just...
Let's take this to Santa's workshop.
Should we try to...
I get what they're trying to do. You can see the bones of the plot kind of laid out there. Like, the kid wants to make a movie for his friend that he thinks will make the kid laugh out of his coma. Why isn't that the movie? You know?
A movie about making a movie?
Yes, which I initially thought this was going to be until it veered off into Crazy Pantsville.
Probably because that would be harder to do, harder to make as a movie, I guess.
I mean, maybe, yeah, effort is the only reason they didn't do that, effort. Because then they just kind of jump straight to, oh, well, we've got this other movie that we've already made. Let's just lie and say that the kid made that movie. And then we don't have to make a movie. Except none of it is funny. I don't know why an 11-year-old would think it was funny. And why would a comatose child think it was funny either? I don't know.
I wasn't comatose and I still couldn't parse half of what was going on.
Yeah.
Ugh.
See, my head's already starting to hurt.
I don't know.
But I mean, that's my Santa's Workshop. It shouldn't have been called a Wrestling Christmas Miracle to start with. But you have to call it something because apparently Karate Christmas Miracle got a lot of good SEO traction. That's the only excuse.
Yeah, you have to take us on a journey about making this movie.
Yeah.
There's not really... Yeah, I don't know. That's kind of the only way you can twist this, I guess. I don't know,
like,
man.
Like, tell us what the kid's friend thought, you know, liked. What were his interests? What did he think was funny? How can he use that to his advantage to make a movie that kid will think will laugh at, you know?
Right.
That's the journey that we should be taking on this. Not a Breaking Bad kind of heist plot about a hard drive.
Yeah. And if they wanted to do, I mean, they did the whole heist angle. I mean, I know they were playing it up, but oh man, a lot of missed opportunities there, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
And I mean, they still like went and did the stunt casting of getting like Scott Schwartz to be in the movie. You could make that a part of the story too. Like, oh man, you got Scott Schwartz to be in your movie. How did you do that? You know, cause you're just a kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
They didn't do any of that. Like,
nope.
This is the problem with doing Santa's Workshop. When your film doesn't try to do anything, everything is a missed opportunity.
Yeah, or make it about wrestling. Like, actually be true to the title. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Have him wrestle his way to having the kid come out of the coma. At least go with the Karate Christmas Miracle angle again. At least that was... weird, and I don't know.
Do you remember how in A Karate Christmas Miracle they show the kid like training and there's only like him and the one other kid and the sensei in the dojo because nobody else was around?
Yes.
And then in this film, like, the first thing we see is like a very crowded arena, like wrestling arena of kids wrestling. And my first thought was like, this could have been a sequel where he had to change sports because nobody else would fight him
because he was too good.
Because he was too good.
Yeah.
Like, right. I was expecting this to be a sequel, and it absolutely is not.
All right, so while we're over here in Santa's Workshop, let's look at Ken Del Vecchio's filmography and see what movie A Boxing Christmas Miracle is going to be made of.
Oh, no.
So, the next is a movie he's executive producer on Aberrant, but then he's a producer on Price for Freedom. And this movie, of course, has Martin Cove in it, but also has Paul Sorvino in it. So I think that's who he's going to pull. He's gonna like say this movie stars Paul Sorvino, Martin Cove, and Martin Del Vecchio in A Boxing Christmas Miracle, and it's literally just going to be all of Paul Sorvino's scenes from Price for Freedom.
Oh, dear.
And there's like a 95% chance you're absolutely right. Only time will tell.
I mean,
what these films remind me of a little bit?
What's that?
You know, sometimes when you're searching for something somewhat obscure online and it takes you to like an auto-generated webpage where they've just pasted in the phrase that you've searched.
Yeah.
Along with a bunch of other, like, somewhat irrelevant stuff. Maybe in the same ballpark. It's kind of like the film version of this.
This is like the ipsum lorem of filmmaking. Like, it's just a placeholder for a real movie. Lorem ipsum, excuse me.
Yeah, I really want to know who this guy knows, though. Because he has just enough pull to get, like, B and C list people in pretty consistently.
Well, remember, last time we talked about this, he's the chairman of the Hoboken International Film Festival.
Oh,
so
yeah.
He must have some pull with somebody somewhere. But also, I mean, honestly, what it is he must know somebody at a casting agency that happens to, like, represent all of these, like, D-list celebrities.
And just because, of course, he's the kind of asshole that does this, when they had the scene at the beginning where they showed Ajax in his protein shake commercial, all of the movies on the shelf behind him were Kenneth DelVecchio's fucking movies.
Absolutely.
The one I recognize is his first movie, Rules for Men.
Yep.
Which, yeah, and that again, just with, like, how does he know these people? You have, like, so he had a guy from The Sopranos, Jackie Martling, stand-up, that's like one of the Borscht Belt comedians, right?
Yeah.
And this guy looks familiar, too.
Oh, Frank Gorshin is in that? Oh my god. The fucking Riddler is in that movie? Is that what you were gonna say?
Yeah. And Richard D'Alessandro, is that somebody who's been in anything? That's another guy. That's another guy from Sopranos, first off. And he played Abby Hoffman in Forrest Gump. He was at the fucking...
Yeah, that's right. So he must be, like, in with all of these people. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, use your network to your advantage.
And for those people, it's like, hey, you gotta get a new garage sometime. Sure, why not?
Exactly.
It's just, like, this dude just has enough money to pursue these absolutely psychopathic vanity projects.
But the one that still, like, blows my mind is that he's listed as an executive producer on Alone in the Dark 2. Which is, like, one level beneath an Uwe Boll film, because Uwe Boll did not direct Alone in the Dark 2.
But you better fucking believe Lance Hendrickson showed up for Alone in the Dark 2.
Guess who else showed up for Alone in the Dark 2? Bill Moseley.
I was looking at Zach Ward, Danny Trejo.
This is a Christmas Creeps smorgasbord of actors here.
I mean, at this point, it's like, why aren't we in a bunch of these shitty fucking movies?
Cast us in your movie. I don't care who it is. Put me in your movie.
I'll play a professional wrestler in a Z-grade movie for Tubi. I'll do it. I don't care. I have no shame anymore. Clearly, I'm on year 8 of a Christmas movie podcast for nobody. Like, I have negative shame at this point. So, hey, Kenny DV, get at me. Were we going to rate this or not?
-5.
Yeah, -5. Yeah. There's no reason for this to be a Christmas movie. Again, even less of a reason than for a Karate Christmas Miracle. Good lord. Yeah. So then, quality quotient, you know, is this better or worse than Karate Christmas Miracle? Because honestly, I could go either way on this.
This is worse because it's like, I mean, I mentioned Kick-Assia earlier. It's like, I would compare, like, Karate Christmas Miracle is closer to The Room and this is closer to Kick-Assia. It's worse because it thinks it knows how to be funny.
Yes, yeah, agreed.
That's true. This is like a fan film of The Room. Can we go -6? I want to break the scale for this.
Yeah.
It's dire.
I want to break the scale for this and give this a -6 because out of respect for Gilbert Gottfried, I want to do this. Because the whole reason we even picked this was because we knew he was in it.
Even though technically he wasn't, if you think about it.
Technically he wasn't. And what we should have done was brought you another stocking stuffer about his episodes of Smiling Friends. But we didn't do that, did we?
His last appearance, and it was a Christmas episode.
We could
How
have
perfect
done
is that?
Maybe next time. We'll see.
Yeah.
But yeah, -6. Agreements?
Yeah.
Thank you.
If anything we do is deserving of it, I think this is a strong contender.
Like, A Karate Christmas Miracle was fun partly because it was like just this inscrutable thing out of nowhere. But now that we know where it came from and we're like deep in the thicket of learning about this entire category of filmmaking, I just want to, like, I want to leave the internet and go hide in shame somewhere that I even uncovered this.
I want to go ahead, just because I'm already still on IMDb.
This is something made for humans.
And read the list of characters Mario Del Vecchio has played. Case Gabriel, Jesse Genesis, Luke Muscle, Sage Stallone, Luke Muscle. Mario Vigilante Jr.
That's the entire cast of The Expendables 4. Like, no, nothing against the kid. The kid is a kid, and he does what he can with this. But
the kid's gonna be really upset with his dad. I'm gonna give it about another like 6 years.
Once he's out of the house.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing where you just pray to God that it doesn't get discovered when you're in high school or college, like late high school, early college. I mean, obviously the ship has sailed on high school. Probably everybody knows he's in movies, but in college, you probably pray that nobody recognizes you or realizes that you were in these movies so many years ago. As one does.
That's a burden that only he can bear, and I wish him the best. I truly do.
I don't know. Maybe he'll lean into it. Maybe he's into it.
Honestly, like, maybe this will be a very valuable lesson, and he'll come out the other side, like, either knowing that being in weird movies like this is like his thing, or knowing I should do something else in my life. Like, only time will tell.
Maybe he'll lean into it. Maybe he'll come out the other end like a weird Artur or something. Who knows? Time will tell.
The sky's the limit, kids.
And yes.
Can't be any worse of a person than Max Landis.
So yeah, let's mark it a wrestling Christmas miracle. We're going to give it a -5, -6 on our crankometer. Broke the scale this week, folks, because I don't think, as prepared as we thought we were for this, we still weren't prepared for the absolute lunacy that unfolded in front of us.
Mm.
And wow, gents, gentle friends, Bradford, J5, I thank you so much for joining me on this ridiculous journey. I couldn't have done it without you.
We couldn't do it without you, our fearless leader who chooses this thing for us to watch. So thank you for that. We were going to watch Harold and Kumar, but somebody
had to go and die on us.
Let's not speak ill of at least this dead.
I don't know. I feel like he probably would have thought that was pretty funny.
It's his final joke on us, I guess.
Yep.
Rest in peace, Gigi. You were one of the good ones. You were one of the good ones.
He really was.
It's really funny because if you look at a lot of Gilbert Gottfried's filmography, if you tried to do like a Gilbert Gottfried review, you'd watch so many movies and you're just like, wait, he was only in 5 minutes of this?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you'd watch, like, Problem Child, and it's like, wait, he's gone already? What the fuck?
The thing is like, he's so iconic, though, too, with that voice. He can just afford to show up, do his thing, like, in one, you know, one afternoon, get his cameo in, hit up craft services, and be back in his at home by, like, 6 p.m., and you gotta respect that.
Yeah, like, a serious question, is Iago the most, like, major character he's played in anything?
I don't know if it was the age that we grew up in, maybe, but I certainly think of Iago every time, like, as his main. That's he, you know, when I think Gilbert Gottfried, I think Iago.
Oh yeah, 100%, absolutely. But I mean, the other things that he's in, like, he's in all three Problem Child movies, again, for like 2 minutes, but he's in all three of them. He's one of those character actors that just pops in as a gag because, like, oh, it's Gilbert Gottfried, you know? Like, that was his thing, and he rode that as far as he could take it, and God bless him for it. And now, dear friends, but yeah, that, I mean, Gilbert Gottfried made his name out of just being Gilbert Gottfried, and God bless him for it.
Yeah, what I know him from more than anything else is USA Up All Night.
Yeah, that's a big one. Rest in peace, Gilbert Gottfried. So next time on the show, I feel fairly confident that I can call our shot because we do have this episode lined up and I'm very excited for it. Our friends from Secret of the Sailor Madness are coming back to help us discuss a Rankin-Bass cartoon. We're discussing The Cricket on the Hearth. So come on back for that episode. That's going to be a rip-roaring, horrible good time, and I can't wait for that. But until then, if there's anything you'd like to send our way, you can tweet at us at Christmas Creeps on Twitter. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Christmas Creeps. We're on YouTube. We're on Stitcher. We're on all the streaming platforms that you use to listen to podcasts. Go like us, subscribe, leave us a star rating and a review. Let people know this is a show that you enjoy, if you enjoy it. Email us anything you want at xmascreeps@gmail.com. That's all the plugs I have for tonight. So, gentle friends, final thoughts, final words, what do you got?
No thoughts. Head empty.
I mean, it's just like, what's good? Like, I'm just thinking, like, what have we not watched yet that we could have someone have, like, a tragic passing and then we're stuck watching some other piece of shit? Like, there's that Danny DeVito movie, and I don't want to think about that. I mean, Matthew Broderick, I could take relief.
Bite your tongue with Danny DeVito. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, Matthew Broderick, I mean he already bought his... He's already traded a few lives for his own.
Oof.
Wow.
Ouch.
It's like a fucking car wreck, doesn't it? Oh, Matthew Broderick killed somebody.
Oh, that's horrible, Jonathan. That's horrible. Folks, that's all we got. I'm Joseph Wade.
Bradford.
I'm Johnny Five the Human Robot.
Have a good night. We'll catch you on the flip side.
Good night, everybody.
Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas.